an Osho talk. Walking in Zen, sitting in Zen. Talks on Zen Stories, number 10.
The first question. What is the goal of meditation? There is no goal of meditation. Meditation is the dropping of all goals. Hence, it can't have a goal of its own. That will be against its very nature. Goals exist in the future. Meditation is to be in the present. There is no meeting ground between the present and the future. Future exists not. How the non-existential can meet the existential? That is impossible. Future is our creation. It is our imagination. We create it for a certain purpose. The purpose is to avoid the present. We don't want to be in the present. We want to escape from the present. Future gives us an escape. To live in the future is to be an escapist. Whatsoever the goals, it does not matter what those goals are. It may be God realization. It may be attainment of nirvana. Still it is a goal. And any goal is against meditation. But our whole mind exists in the future. Our mind is against the present. In the present, the mind dies. How can the mind exist in the present? If you are utterly now, utterly here, there is no question of mind. You cannot think, because thinking needs a space. And present has no space in it. It is just like a needle point. It cannot contain anything, not even a single thought. Hence, if you want to live in the mind, either you have to live in the past or in the future. These are the two ways. The old-fashioned, the orthodox, the conventional, the Christians, the Mohammedans, the Hindus, they live in the past. And the so-called revolutionaries, the progressives, the avant-garde, they live in the future. The communists, the socialists, the Fabians, the utopians, all kinds of idealists, they live in the future. On the surface, they seem to be very different. The Catholic and the communist seem to be antagonistic. Deep down, they are not antagonistic at all. They belong to the same category. They are doing the same work. They both are escaping from the present. The Hindu lives in the golden age that has passed. His golden age was somewhere far, far away in the past. It is only a memory. It has never been there. That past is simply a creation of imaginative people. But it helps to escape from the present. Hindus call it Ram Rajya, the kingdom of God. It was in the past, and since then man has been falling down. Hence, Hindus cannot agree with Charles Darwin, with the idea of evolution. Hindus have a totally different idea, the idea of involution, not evolution. Man is not progressing. Man is regressing. Man is falling every day. Man is going down the hill. The peaks are left in the past. The golden peaks, the sunlit peaks. The communist lives in the future. His golden age is still to come. It will come one day. Somewhere far away in the future, when the state will wither away, when the society will become classless, when there will be no exploitation, when there will be no need for any government, when people will live in equality, that will be the kingdom of God. But that is in the future. That too is never going to happen. The communist and the Hindu both are doing the same thing. They are partners in the same business. The business is how to escape from the present. How not to live in the present. Hence you will see a strange thing happening. Hindus are against me. Mohammedans are against me. Christians are against me. Communists are against me. On one thing they all agree. At least on one thing they all agree. At least I am happy that I give them one point to agree about. But in fact they agree because my insistence is against the past and against the future. My insistence is to be in the present. Hence, meditation cannot allow any desire for goals. I can understand your question because the mind always asks, why you are doing it. It can't do anything simply, spontaneously. The why is always there. You don't know any action in your life which is spontaneous. You don't know any response. All that you do is not action, in fact, but reaction. You do it because there are reasons to do it. There are motives to do it. There are desires behind it. Something is pushing either from the behind or pulling from the front. You are never acting out of freedom. You are a slave. Hence you always ask why. A man was sent by his psychiatrist to the mountains just for a change, to rest, to relax, to enjoy nature. The next day, his telegram arrived. I am feeling very happy. Why? One cannot accept anything without asking why. Now, one thing about happiness has to be understood. Misery may have causes. Happiness has no cause. And if it has cause, it is nothing but misery, masquerading as happiness. When happiness is true, that's what is meant by bliss. It has no cause, no causality. It is beyond cause and effect. It is beyond the chain of cause and effect. You cannot answer why. Buddha has been asked many times, why you are so blissful, so peaceful? He always says, such is the nature of awareness. Tathata. Now his answer has to be deeply pondered over. He says, there is no why to it. Such is the case. The trees are green. And the flowers are red. And the man who is awakened is blissful. There is no why to it. But the people who were asking again and again, I think he must have been asked thousands of times. The same question by different people. The people may look different from the outside, but deep down they are all unconscious. So the same question arises again and again out of their unconscious minds. Why? There must be some reason. Have you discovered some treasure? Have you found some Kohinoors? Have you found some alchemy so that you can transform baser metal into gold? Have you found some secret that can make you immortal? Why you are so blissful? The people who are asking are saying something about themselves. They are not really asking why Buddha is blissful. They can't understand Buddha. They know only themselves. They know They are miserable, and their misery has a cause. And once in a while, when they feel happy, that happiness is also caused by something. You win a lottery, and you are happy. Without the lottery, how can you be happy? And Buddha has not won any lottery. In fact, he has renounced his palace and kingdom and all the riches. People must be searching, trying to find out. There must be something that he has found, which he is hiding and not telling to us. What it is? Why you look so happy? Prabhu Maya has asked me a question. The same question that Buddhas have always been asked is being asked again and again here too. She asked, I have recently been discovering the phoniness behind the smile I sometimes wear. Now I wonder about you, the same face, the same smile, every morning, year in and year out, is it for real? I can understand her question. Because whenever she is smiling, she knows it is phony. And I am constantly smiling. Naturally, year in and year out, it must be phony. Otherwise, there is some hidden cause into it, which is not visible to you. Either it is phony, or I have discovered something which I am not telling to you, which I am hiding from you. Even Ananda, Buddha's closest disciple, asked one day, when they were walking through a forest, and it was autumn, and leaves were falling from the trees, and the whole forest was full of dry leaves, and the wind was blowing those dry leaves, and there was great sound of dry leaves moving here and there. And they were passing through the forest. Ananda asked Buddha, Bhagwan, one question persists. I have been repressing it. But I cannot repress it anymore. And today, we are alone. Other followers are left behind. So nobody will know that I have asked it to you. I don't want to ask it before others. My question is, are you telling all that you have discovered, or you are still hiding something? Because what you are telling to us does not clarify your bliss, your peace. It seems you are hiding something. And Buddha laughed. And he showed a fist to Ananda. And asked Ananda, do you see what it is? He said, yes, I can see it is a fist. Your hand is closed. Buddha said, a Buddha is never like a fist. He opened his hands and he said, a Buddha is like an open hand. He hides nothing. There is nothing to hide. I have said everything. I am absolutely open. Ananda still insisted, but we cannot explain your constant bliss. And I have been watching you day in, day out. In the day, you are blissful. In the night, when you go to sleep, you are blissful. Your face seems so innocent, even in sleep. Even in sleep, you look so peaceful, so serene, so tranquil, so calm, as if not a dream is passing within you. You are always a still pool with no ripples. How is it possible? I have also tried, but only a little bit I can do and then I feel tired. If you are trying, you will feel tired. Prabhu Maya, if you try to wear a smile, you will feel tired. Because wearing a smile means making great efforts. Either you have to practice it like Jimmy Carter, then it is not a smile at all. Your mouth is simply open. Your teeth are simply showing, that's all. I have heard that his wife every night has to close his mouth. Because once a rat went into his mouth, she phoned the doctor. And the doctor said, I'm coming, but it will take time. Meanwhile, you hang cheese in front of his mouth. When the doctor came, he was very much surprised. She was hanging another rat. He said, what are you doing? I have told you to hang cheese in front of his mouth. She said, that's right, but one cat has entered behind the rat. So first the rat has to be, cat has to be taken out. Since then, she has to close his mouth every night, forcibly. It is dangerous. And the White House is an old building, it has many rats. In fact, who lives in the White House except rats? Who is interested to live in the White House? And because rats live there, cats also live there. Meditation has no goal. It has no desire of anything to attain. The dropping of the achieving mind is what meditation is all about. The understanding of desire and the understanding of the constant ambition for goals, for achievement, for ambition, brings you to a point of tremendous awareness, that you can see clearly that all goals are false, that you need not go anywhere, that you need not attain anything to be blissful, that to be blissful is your nature. You are missing it because you are running here and there. And in that running, in that hustle and bustle, you go on forgetting yourself. Stop running here and there and discover yourself. The discovery of yourself is not a goal. How it can be a goal? A goal needs a distance between you and itself. The discovery of yourself is not a goal, because you are already it. All that is needed is you stop running here and there. You sit silently. You relax. You rest. Let the mind become calm and cool. When the mind is no more running towards the past and towards the future, when all running has disappeared, when there is no mind as such, when you are simply there, doing nothing, just being, this is meditation. Suddenly, you know who you are. Suddenly, you are overflooded with bliss. Overwhelmed by light, by eternity. And then your life becomes a natural phenomenon. Then you need not wear smiles. A smile becomes natural. Then you need not pretend to be happy. Only an unhappy person pretends to be happy. A happy person has no idea even that he is happy. He is simply happy. Others may think that he is happy. He has no idea. He is simply just being himself. Yoga says, those who understand always act naturally. Out of his understanding, his actions are natural. His laughter is natural. His smile is natural. His whole life is natural. Your whole life is artificial, arbitrary. You are always trying to do something which is not really there. You are trying to love, not trying to love. It's to start in a wrong way from the very beginning. You are trying to be happy. How you can be happy? It is not a question of trying. You are making all kinds of efforts to be graceful. Now, grace is not an effort. If there is effort, there is no grace. Grace is an effortless beauty. The really graceful person knows no effort. Yuka says, those who understand always act naturally. Most men live in impermanence, the unreal. But the man of Zen lives in the real. You live in the phony, in the unreal. And when you come across a man of Zen, remember, the man of Zen means the man of meditation. Then there is a problem for you. Never try to understand the man of Zen according to your ideas. They are irrelevant. You can understand the man of Zen only through meditation. Learn the art of meditation, of being here and now. Not for peace, not for bliss, not for anything. Effort without goal, that's what meditation is. Effort without goal. Now you know only effort when there is goal. Otherwise you will ask, this is illogical. Effort without goal? Then why we should make effort? You have been making effort for goals. What have you attained? It is time to try something else. Enough is enough. Yoga says effort without goal is quite different. Quite different from all that you have done up to now. It opens the door of truth, which leads to the garden of Tathagata. The word Tathagata comes from the same word I used just few moments before, Tathata. Buddha says, I am peaceful because this is my suchness, my Tathata. Ask him anything, and he always says, this is my nature, my Tathata. Slowly, slowly, it became known to his disciples that Tathata is his most important word, his key word. Hence he is called Tathagat, one who lives in suchness. One who lives now and knows no other time. One who lives here and knows no other space. If you can also be here and now, it opens the door of truth, which leads to the garden of Tathagata. A true disciple of Zen ignores the branches and the leaves and aims for the root. What is the root of your misery? This goal-oriented mind. What is the root of your misery? This constant escape into goals. What is the root of your misery? Your mind is the root of your misery. But you never cut the root. You go on pruning the branches. You go on pruning the leaves. And remember, the more you prune the leaves and the branches, thicker will be the foliage. The tree will become stronger. I have initiated more than 100,000 sannyasins. And I have been teaching meditation for 20 years to millions of people. But not a single person has come with a root question to ask. They all come, how to cut this branch and how to cut this leaf. Somebody says, I am suffering from anger, what should I do with it? And somebody says, I am suffering from too much greed, what should I do about it? How I can drop greed? and somebody is suffering from jealousy, and somebody is suffering from something else, and these are all branches and leaves. Nobody comes and says, I am suffering from my mind. How should I get rid of it? And that is the root question. The day you will see the roots, things are very easy. Cut the roots and the whole tree withers away on its own accord. Anger and greed and sexuality and jealousy and possessiveness, everything disappears. But you don't want to cut the roots. You are living a very paradoxical life. You go on watering the roots. You go on training and refining your mind. You go on making your mind more informed, more nourished. And you go on trying, on the other hand, that there should be less anger, less ambition, less greed, less ego. How to be humble, you ask. And you go on pouring water, and you go on giving fertilizers to the roots, and you go on cutting the leaves. You cut one leaf, and three leaves will come in its place. The tree immediately accepts your challenge. And instead of one, it brings three leaves. Hence, a society that has been against sex becomes morbid, becomes sexually obsessed. It has happened in India. You will not find so sex-obsessed country anywhere else. For the simple reason, because they have been cutting the leaf again and again. They are constantly cutting that leaf, and the tree goes on growing more leaves. So sexuality has penetrated in such subtle ways that unless you are very alert, you will not be able to see how it has penetrated in different ways. How the Indian mind has become more and more sexual than anybody else. Do you know India is the first country to think about sexual postures? Kama Sutra was written in India. The first treatise on sexuality. Sigmund Freud comes after 5,000 years. And Masters and Johnson and other researchers into sex are just breaking ground in the West, and they have not yet that sophistication which Vatsyayana's Kama Sutra has. Even French are not that sophisticated. Vatsyayana has discovered almost everything about sex. Nothing is left. His treatise is almost complete. And it is a how-to book. It gives you all the techniques. Why India discovered Kama Sutra? The country who has been celebrating for centuries celibacy, who has been teaching and preaching celibacy, this country discovers Kama Sutra. This country gives birth to a man like Vatsyayana, and then came Pandit Koka, another Vatsyayana. Now, modern pornography is nothing compared to Pandit Koka. Modern pornography is very ordinary. Pandit Koka is a perfect pornographer. But why these people were born in India? And thousands of temples are devoted to Shivalinga. That is a phallic symbol. No other country worships phallic symbols except India. And it is both. It represents man and woman both. If you go to a Shiva temple, observe well. It represents the feminine sexual organ. It represents the masculine sexual organ. And it represents them in a state of meeting, in a state of orgasm. And this is worshipped. People have completely forgotten what they are worshipping. If you look into Indian scriptures, you will be surprised. You will find them so obsessed with sex, on the one hand continuously condemning, and on the other hand, continuously, in subtle ways, depicting it. No other country has temples like Khajuraho, Konark, Puri. Why? Why this had to happen in India? For the simple reason, you cut one leaf and three arrive. You cut three and nine leaves arrive. You cut nine and remember, 27 leaves will arrive. Nature believes in the magic number of three. It believes in Trinity. This is not the way to transform a man. This is a way to deform humanity. So on the surface, the Indian tries to show that he is not interested in sex at all. And deep down, he is boiling with sexuality. He is constantly looking for sexuality. His whole mind is full of sexuality. If we can make windows in the heads of people, then Indian heads will be really worth seeing. This was bound to happen. Whatsoever you repress, whatsoever you cut, if it is not cut from the roots, it is bound to grow. It is bound to grow in subtle ways it may start asserting into morbid and perverted ways. Yoka says, a true disciple of Zen ignores the branches and the leaves and aims for the root, like the image of the moon reflected in a jade bowl. I know the true beauty of the jewel of freedom for myself and for others. There is only one freedom, the freedom from all goals. Pragita, don't ask me what is the goal of meditation. Try to understand why you are constantly hankering for goals. And in that very understanding, meditation will arise in you. Meditation will flower in you. Meditation is not something that you can enforce. You can practice. It is something very mysterious, tremendously vast. It comes only when your heart opens its doors to understand everything with no prejudice, with no a priori conclusions. Here, being with me, learn to be without goals. My sannyasins have to know perfectly well that we are not working for any goal at all. Our whole point is to live in the present moment so totally that all past and all future disappears. Who cares about that which is already gone? And who cares about that which has not come yet? Enough is the moment unto itself. And that is the way of meditation. Enough is the moment unto itself. Living the moment in its totality, in joy. Diving deep into it without holding anything back is bliss. Getting rid of all goals, worldly and otherworldly, material and spiritual. One knows the taste of meditation. It is the taste of absolute freedom. The second question, why does everyone here understands you in his own way? It is just natural. Tathata. How it can be otherwise? Everybody has to understand me in his own way. Because everybody has a mind. And now, the understanding is happening through the mind. When mind disappears, then of course, everybody will understand in my way, then there will be no problem, then there will be no question, then there will be no need for me to say anything. I will be sitting in silence, you will be sitting in silence. And we will enjoy silence. And there will be communion, a heart-to-heart communion. But right now, you have minds. And there is no other way for me to communicate with you. And one has to accept this, that when you are communicating with minds, you have to accept this, that they will understand differently. They will understand their own way. Each mind is different. And here, we have all kinds of minds. This is not a community of a certain society. If only Hindus were here, they will understand or misunderstand in the same way. But here are Hindus and Mohammedans and Jainas and Buddhists and Christians and Mohammedans and Jews and Zarathustrians. They have all their own religious backgrounds and all kinds of political ideologies. And we have people from all the nations of the world. Near about 40 nations are represented here. How can you expect? This is not a Catholic church. This is not a Hindu temple. This is a miniature universe. In fact, it is a miracle that some understanding is happening. That people are not cutting each other's throats. That people are being very friendly and loving. These are the people who have been cutting each other's throats for centuries. Hindus killing Mohammedans, Mohammedans killing Hindus. And here you will see the miracle. You will find a man called Krishna Muhammad. You cannot find anywhere else in the world. Krishna Muhammad. In fact, I am very much worried when I die and I go to the other world. Then all these people, Krishna and Moses and Muhammad and Mahavir and Buddha, they will jump upon me. They will say, what have you been doing? Calling him and Krishna Muhammad. Because I have heard even in heaven, they have compartments. Hindus live in one compartment, the Hindu colony. And the Mohammedans live in another compartment. And they don't see each other eye to eye. In fact, everybody believes that he is in heaven and nobody else is in heaven. God has to maintain that illusion. Otherwise, they will be creating trouble for God. So big walls surround those sections. Now God also is going to be in trouble. Where he will put Krishna Muhammad? In the Hindu section or in the Mohammedan section? Our people will be flying all over the place. It is natural that people should understand differently. People have different minds. Julius, how many commandments are there? Julia, 10. Julius, what would happen if you, if you broke one of them, Julia, so there would be 9. On Mother's Day, her husband presented her with a beautiful skunk coat. I can't see how such a beautiful coat comes from such a foul smelling beast, said the mother. I don't ask for thanks, dear, replied the husband, but I do demand respect. An Italian calls Alitalia's office and is answered by the office boy, "Please, sir, is that the Alitalia office?" "Yes," answers the boy. "Can you tell me how long it takes from Roma to Pune?" "Just a minute, sir. Thank you," answers the Italian and hangs up. "Have you ever been bedridden?" the new doctor asked Mrs. Longo. "Sure I have. And I have been screwed lots of other ways too," the lady said proudly. "What do you want for your birthday, son?" the indulgent Italian father asked his kids. "I want a watch." The kid said, shrugged the father, "If it is all right with your mother, it is okay by me." During an official ceremony in a European country, the Brazilian ambassador is in a carriage with the Queen of England, when suddenly the horse farts noisily. Very embarrassed, the Queen apologizes, "I am very sorry, ambassador. It was nothing, Your Majesty, it happens. Mind you, I even thought it was the horse." The third question, what is courage? There is only one courage, and that is the courage to go on dying to the past, not to collect it, not to accumulate it, not to cling to it. We all cling to the past. And because we cling to the past, we become unavailable to the present. And there are reasons, valid reasons to the mind for clinging to the past. First, mind itself is past. Just look at your mind, what it is. It is nothing but past. All that you have read, listened, experienced, observed, all that has been, mind never is. It contains of the past tense. So naturally, mind feeds on the past. It clings to the past because that gives it strength, powers. Energy, life. But the more the past accumulates around you, you become like a mirror covered with layers of dust. And of course, the past is comfortable. It feels cozy because you are well acquainted with it. You know it perfectly well. So you know how to deal with it. You are skillful with it. You are artful with it. Your whole intelligence depends on it. To drop it will mean you will have to learn again and again. And that is inconvenient, uncomfortable. To drop the past will mean you will have to become a child every day. And your ego wants to be adult, not a child. Your ego wants to pile up the past and sit upon it so it looks higher than others. Without the past, you will always remain a child with no knowledge, but with full of wonder, with awe. That is the only courage, to drop the known and to move into the unknown. And it has not to be done once. It has to be done every moment. It is not a question that once done, it is done forever. You have to do it every moment, every day. Till the very last moment of your life, when you are dying on your bed, then too you have to continue the process of dying to the past so that you can live each moment with pristine clarity. With no dust on your mirrors. When you can reflect the present as it is, you know what God is, what godliness is. God is another name for what is, for that which is. But you are collecting information about God, and that is one of the greatest barriers. Hence I have heard sinners reaching God, but I have never heard scholars ever reaching God. Pandits are the most impossible people. The more they know, the farther away they are from God. So many scriptures are preventing them. They cannot reach to God, and God cannot reach to them. They are absolutely closed in their knowledge. Courage means courage to drop knowledge, courage to be innocent again, courage to function from a state of not knowing. I don't know of any other courage. When I use the word courage, I don't mean the courage of a soldier. That is just stupidity. That is not courage. That is just stubbornness. That is not courage. That is just forced. You have to train the soldier so that he becomes dull. It is unintelligence, not intelligence. Hence, soldiers become unintelligent people. The more medals they have, you can be certain that the more unintelligent they are. Just count their medals on their chest and you know how foolish they are. The whole process of the army is to destroy intelligence, because an intelligent person will not be able to kill. And an intelligent person will ask 1001 questions before killing somebody for no reason at all. An Indian killing a Pakistani whom he had never met before, whom he had never seen before, with whom there is no enmity. And a Pakistani killing an Indian for no reason at all. He has not done any harm to him. If they were a little bit intelligent, will they be able to do it? Will the Indian or the Pakistani will be able to do it without thinking of this man's wife who will be waiting home, just as his wife is waiting home for him and his small children will be waiting, just as his small children are waiting for him and his old mother and his old father who depend on him, just as his mother and father depend on him. Will he be able to do this stupidity of killing or being killed? If soldiers are allowed to be intelligent, wars will disappear from the earth. Wars can exist only if soldiers are to be made in such a way, conditioned in such a way, that they lose all intelligence. That's why unintelligent training has to be forced on them for years. Now the soldier for years goes on doing things which make no sense early in the morning. He gets up, he has to line up, and the parade begins, and left turn, and right turn, and about turn, and go forward, and go backwards. For what? And for hours together. In the Second World War, a philosopher was recruited. When the commanding officer said, right turn, everybody turned right except the philosopher. He asked, why? Why are you not turning right? He said, why should I turn? I have no business. I don't see the need. And I think all these people are fools. Just you say right turn and they have turned. You will have to prove to me, what is the purpose? Why should I turn right? The commanding officer knew that he was a famous philosopher. He said, this man is not right for the military. This type of people are not needed. Even other soldiers started thinking that that's right. Why? We are certainly fools. Just this man says right turn and he has no answer for it. And we turned right. The commanding officer thought this man will create trouble. Not only he will be a trouble to me, even others will start getting ideas from him. So he took him out and he said, this is not for you. You come into the kitchen. I will give you some other job. Some simple job will be good. So he gave him a pile of potatoes and told him, you just sort them out. Bigger ones on one side, smaller ones on another side. After 1 hour when he came, the philosopher was sitting silently, just in his zazen, sitting silently doing nothing. Not even he has touched a single potato. The commanding officer said, can't you even do that? He said, I can do it. But there is a great problem. Yes, there are few potatoes which are big and few which are small, but few are in between. First it has to be settled where those in between ones go. Unless everything is clear, I never take any step. What about the middle class potatoes? He had to be freed. This man is not for army. In fact, no intelligent man is for the army. Parading 6 hours per day. Turning right, turning left, ordering stupid things and following those orders. Then one day, the commanding officer says, shoot! And they are just functioning like machines. Just as they were turning left and right, they shoot. Without a single thought, what they are doing. Destroying life. A sannyasin needs a totally different kind of courage. This is not courage. This is simply dullness, stupidity, thickness of the head and nothing else. Their intelligence had been completely destroyed. They have been conditioned to be robots. That's why all army races prove to be very unintelligent. In India, the Punjabis, particularly the Sikhs, the Sardars, they are the most warlike people and the most unintelligent people too. Very courageous. Because where an intelligent person will think twice, they will rush. They will not bother. You just order and they will go into the fire. This type of courage has been taught to humanity for centuries. This is the wrong type of courage. When I use the word courage, I am using it with a totally different connotation, a different meaning. Courage to me means courage. To be intelligent against this unintelligent crowd that surrounds you. Courage means fearlessness. The society will try in every way to force you according to its ideas. It is better to suffer than to compromise. Because through suffering, your soul will be born. Through compromise, you may save your skin, but your soul will be lost. Courage means to be an individual, not to be a sheep, but to be a lion. Courage means the capacity to assert that I am myself, and my life is my life, and I am going to live it in my way, and I am not here to live according to others, and I won't allow anybody to dictate me how I should live, what should I do. I will live according to my light, whatsoever the cost, even if I go astray. It is better to go to hell by your own decision rather than to go to heaven by somebody else's order, because then heaven will be just slavery. Courage means courage to be free. Courage means freedom. And if you reduce it to the essential core, it is in fact dying to the past. If you die to the past, you die to the tradition you are born. You die to the religion you are born. You die to the society you are born. You die to the whole past. You die to history and time. And you are born anew, a new human being who belongs to no race, to no country, to no religion, but who belongs to God. A religious person, but not a Christian, not a Hindu, not a Mohammedan. The fourth question. What is your English, British or American? It is certainly not British. To be British is not easy. One has to be born British at least 7 times. It takes very long to be British. And it is not American either. Because I am not a tourist. You know, I don't even leave my room. What kind of American I can be? And why my English should be British or American? My English is my English. Rajni's English. And this is a democratic country. And the Constitution declares it as one of the fundamental rights, the freedom of speech. I speak my own language. Why should I speak American or English? In fact, English is too tight. It is too tense. An American has gone too lousy. Just the opposite. It is a reaction. My American born daughter, she is telling me, Popsy Wopsy, I gotcha, but you will have to lay some heavy bread on me so as I can start new threads at the establishment, bust out, ya dig? So I am digging for maybe a half hour to learn. She needs money, she should have a new dress for the school dance. And she is criticizing my dialect. A father was saying to me, now it is very difficult for me to understand. Popsy Wopsy, I gotcha. But you will have to lay some heavy bread on me so as I can start new threads at the establishment, bust out, ya dig? I don't dig it at all. And why should I dig? I have never done such a job in my whole life. So I simply speak whatsoever comes to me. Whatsoever comes is spontaneously to me. You will have to be a little patient with me. The fifth question. Have you forgotten us poor Australians completely? I have not forgotten. I am collecting jokes about the Australians. Everybody is welcome to send me jokes about Australians. I have got only one. A man walked into a London pub and ordered 12 pints of bitters. He put them on a tray, took them outside to a car, and passed them through the window. Later he brought back the empty glasses, bought another round and passed them into the car. Curious, the bartender went outside with the next round and looking into the car saw 12 midgets carousing and drinking beer. Who are they? He asked. I said the man, they are just Australians with all the bullshit knocked out of them. The sixth question, you always talk about masters and all of them are men. Does that mean that a woman can't become a master? No, that does not mean that a woman can't become a master. Many women have become masters, but then there is a problem. The problem is, unless a man becomes a master, he is not allowed to speak by the wife. and he has not been a master for thousands of lives. So when he becomes a master, he starts speaking. And when a woman becomes a master, she becomes silent, she is tired. For thousands of lives she has been speaking and speaking and speaking. She has done speaking enough, so she becomes silent. Now it is very difficult how to know about silent masters. Unless you speak, nobody will know about you. If Buddha had not spoken, if there has not been any Dhammapada, then I would not have talked on his sutras. A man takes revenge when he becomes a master. And do you see that whenever there is a master, more women gather to hear him than men. In fact, the proportion is in four. Three are women, one is man. That was the proportion of Buddha's disciples. That was the proportion of Mahavira's disciples. So he really takes revenge. So many women, and he remembers all those wives. Many of them may have been his wives in the past lives. Wives, mothers, daughters, sisters, they have all tortured him. Now he says to himself, now, it is my turn. Nobody can prevent me now. But women, by the time they become masters, have run out of gas. The seventh question. Please, before I leave, say something to me without words. Okay. Dig it. Get it? It is not difficult for me. It will be difficult for you. But a little more. The eighth question. How do they catch a lion in Russia? Please don't ask such difficult questions. They arrest a cat and torture him until he admits he is a lion. The ninth question, what is the secret of success? You are asking me a man who is an utter failure. The secret of success is sincerity. Once you can fake that, you have got it made. The 10th question, what is the right Catholic Christian way to prevent population explosion in the world? You should go to the Vatican and ask the Pollock. I am not a Catholic. I am not a Pope. You create trouble for me. But I can suggest, this is only an advice. Sow your wild oats on Saturday night, then on Sunday pray for crop failure. And the last question, what is a blow job? Muktananda, you fool. Now this question is just the right question from you. I had always known you will ask something really great. The moment I saw you, I immediately realized here is a great fool. Hence the name Muktananda. Although I didn't explain it to you that way. I give beautiful explanations. Just to be polite. Truth can be said only later on, when you are ready. For example, you know, our great God, Sant. Somebody has asked me, why you have given him the name Sant? In Hindi, Sant means saint. The English word saint comes from Sant. But in Hindi, we also have one beautiful expression, Ant Sant. Ant Sant means nonsense. So when I saw Sant for the first time, I said, here comes Ant Sant. But Ant I had to drop, because that will be too much just in the beginning. So I called him Sant. But now, it can be said, there is no trouble. Muktananda, I immediately saw the fool in you. But even I was not so sure that you will be a perfect fool. Otherwise, I would have called you Paramhansa Muktananda. Paramhansa means perfect. Now you deserve to be called Paramhans Muktananda. Now what kind of question is this? Drinks on the house. The Italian said to the bartender, I feel great. Just had my first blowjob. What was it like? The barkeep asked. Okay, I guess, the wop said. But it did taste kind of funny. A brave young Irish revolutionary comes to London to blow up a bus and burns his mouth on the exhaust pipe. An Italian dwarf was very famous among his friends for the size of his prick. A sex-starved American female tourist heard about him and visited his home to offer him $20 to see his massive member. Luigino agreed and pulled down his zipper to display his pride and joy. The American lady was awestruck at the sight and asked hesitantly, Is it all right if I kiss it? Please, missus, said the dwarf, no more blowjobs. 10 years ago I was 7 feet tall with a tiny prick. Just look at what all these blowjobs have done to me. Muktananda never asked such dangerous questions to me. You are expected to ask spiritual questions, esoteric questions, supramental questions. And you are asking such questions which no Buddha had to answer before. And I don't think anybody else in future will have to answer, because I will finish them all. Enough for today.